Tonight on Fallen Woman 35, featuring Dirty Martini and Cher Noble, interview intimacy conjures crystal clear coup de foudre with soulful soup sorcery, cosmic cosmetic incantations, drag is burlesque's sister, lip sync versus the big reveal, burlesque in the 90s, the big apple sweet and sour, and Hotel California by Vulgaris. Welcome to Fallen Woman. Fallen Woman on Radio Free Brooklyn. I am late nighting it now with Cher Noble.
Is that my cue? What's my line?
Girl, tell me about soup.
Soup? It's yeah. Fall.
It is the great time to make soup.
Right. It's not quite winter yet, so you can't use the oven.
Yes.
But you can still use the stove or crock pots.
Exactly. But or hot plate.
I've never owned a hot plate.
I have a couple in the closet.
Really?
Yeah, because I like camping.
But soup is great. You can make a big fat pot of it and eat it for like 2 weeks.
Dang, you can put it in a mason jar, store it.
I love it.
Yeah. What was the last soup that you made?
Oh, God, I don't know. It's been too long.
It was last winter. Oh, yeah, so I've been doing it throughout the summer and doing gazpacho and chilled soups and stuff.
Oh, I haven't done that.
I got really into a pea mint light, super strained, so like almost no texture. Like it's just, like you just keep straining it after you blend the shit out of it, and it's very light and refreshing. And the latest one I got into was, I got into it, but really too heavy. Like, it was a truffle corn soup.
Oh, God, that sounds perfect.
And it was amazing, but it was I got a little too decadent with the truffle. and not everyone liked it. I loved it, but it was very particular. The next corn bisque I'm excited about is the jalapeno corn bisque, and you definitely serve that cold.
That sounds really good, too.
Oh, yeah. And you put some beech mushrooms on the bottom, those little tiny ones that look poisonous.
Mm.
Yeah.
I think the last soup I made was ramen. Does that count as a soup?
It's a noodle soup. Yeah, that counts.
I wanted to learn how to make ramen, like, from scratch. Uh-huh. It's a really ridiculously
arduous involved process. Really?
Oh yeah.
Really?
Like to make the broth, you have to go and find this weird seaweed somewhere. And they only
it's
really
not like nori, it's a
no,
nori
it's like a totally
seaweed.
Different thing. And wow. It's really thick and big, and you have to like soak it in a pot for an hour.
It's not like dulce is very bacony. It wouldn't be dulce.
I don't know what that is.
That's my favorite seaweed. Feels like suede on your tongue and tastes like bacon.
This definitely does not taste like bacon.
No.
But I think it might feel like suede.
Okay, yeah. It might have that funky texture. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking. Because you kind of have to soak it a bit.
Right. It's probably very similar. And then you also have to do that with bonito flakes. And then like strain it through a cheesecloth. I know. I bought
it's like crack.
I bought bullshit organic, like $10 a pack cat treats one time.
Uh-huh.
And the cat hated it, but loved the bonito flakes.
Oh, yeah. You ever put them like on a hot bed of rice and watch them dance?
Bonito flakes?
Yeah, it's crazy.
Uh-huh.
Oh, it's so weird. I was at a Korean restaurant and they were serving me some rice like that. And then they put a thin layer of, shaved bonito flakes on top. And the steam, it made the whole thing move like it was alive.
Weird.
For a while, actually, like longer than you'd think. It was really cool. Huh. Try it at home. It'd be like a videotape.
That'd be a good way to use up those fucking Bonito flakes.
Yeah, you just throw it out like a layer on top of
the
some
decoration.
Fried. Yeah. You put it on top of the ramen, they'd probably dance.
Ooh, okay. I'm
like as a garnish
that.
On top.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm gonna give that a shot, I think.
That'd be really cool. What else was involved with this ramen? Did you have to make the noodles by hand?
Oh, no, I didn't
go
that
far. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, you only have so much kitchen space in New York.
It's true. And time.
Right. Oh, God. Ain't got no time.
Uh-oh.
But yeah, the broth is really like the longest part. Everything else comes together pretty quick. But that broth is a bitch. It's,
Was bone marrow involved, or...?
Not in this one, but I'm sure probably somewhere.
Yeah.
You basically put anything in it. It's like fried rice. It's like leftovers.
Mm-hmm.
I also hate making German chocolate cake.
But you love it.
I know, every...
I can tell by your face. Yeah. You love German chocolate cake.
Every few years I make one and then realize that, like, I absolutely hate the process of making it, and then...
I try flourless kind or like the really fluffy kind with the coconut and all that.
Yeah, that one.
Okay, yeah.
Takes too long to make. I hate it.
Oh.
It's so good.
It makes you happy. You ever get someone to make it for you?
No.
You need a slave.
That would be nice.
Yeah. You would be a high candidate for getting a slave.
Now I'm taking applicants.
Yeah.
Please email my lawyer.
You are like model gorgeous. I'm not gonna lie. I'm not gonna hold back on that one. Folks, if you have not seen Chernobyl in person, it's a sight to behold.
That's
stunning
just a
runway
vicious
model type
rumor.
Dressed like a freak of nature. It's really fun. So interesting combination, Beauty and the Beast in one body. It's really hot. And on that note, how about your makeup? Let's talk about that.
Oh God, I've been doing a bunch of different makeup looks lately. I've been going out.
And it's
and
a
like...
worthy topic because it's like a crazy art form with you.
It's the only part of drag I like doing.
Obviously throw your heart and soul into it.
But I've been doing a lot more, like, boy face makeup lately.
Mm-hmm.
And...
What's boy face makeup? Just curious.
Well,
like, what you have on now, I would not consider boy face.
Right. Basically, it's either, like, boy face
or... I mean, today's, like, the
drag face.
Very soft, glamorous, like... Lady Gaga on a really dark day, but still there's that soft glamour, you know, that Madonna soft, dark glamour going on. And I usually see you looking like a creature from another planet. So this was like really intensely glamorous drag you did
today.
Well,
I've been trying to mix the two. I was trying to make the alien of Chernobyl look
beast.
A little more like a human.
Right.
Just
more
to like
beauty, to
right,
the
right.
Yeah.
And just to see like what I could make of it. But now I miss the old Chernobyl.
You
sometimes.
Like the you miss the beast.
I miss those nasty cut cheeks and
oh my god.
This is the
softest I've ever seen your cheeks. I mean they're seriously defined and beautifully done. Like they look expensive. Your cheeks look expensive.
That's the second time someone's used expensive to describe my makeup.
Today?
No.
Oh.
I wish. Just in general.
Well, today is just now.
But yeah, like at this point I can't even remember where I used to put those old eyes, the old eyelids.
Like how far up?
Like it doesn't make sense to me anymore how that worked out. They were so
really did.
High. A bunch of people were talking on Facebook today about cutting the cheek like from the side of the face all the way down to the mouth. Which kind of became my signature look for a while. But they were bringing that up and just talking about how much they loved that face, and it brought back a lot of memories of it. I miss it.
I love that face.
It's been a while since I've done that one.
Can I tell you why I love that face? Because it's very androgynous to me. It speaks of neither sex. It almost gives a hint of 5 o'clock shadow when I see that face. It's like a really glamorous, bitchy, diva, fuck you, 5 o'clock shadow. When they cut the cheeks like that. Like, I know, I get the point. It's very kabuki on some level, too. It's got that art with it. But at the same time, like, from looking at a male face transforming into a female face, when the cheeks get cut that severe and it's so dark from the cheekbones down, 5 o'clock shadow.
Right.
Yeah. That's why you look so soft today.
Well, and that shape, when you draw it that hard, it just looks like a giant mutton chop anyway.
Kinda, yeah, but when people, like, take it to a whole other level, it's kind of amazing, though, too.
Right.
Like you, big time Maybelline, am I correct on that one?
Maybelline?
No, I think Maybelline's not the right name. Damn it. I hate when I don't remember names. It'll come to me. But I love your, they never look like mutton chops on you. You just look like you're from outer space.
Well, that's part of the reason I stopped doing it, is because I hated the way it looked from the side. It looked too harsh. I wanted to look good photographed from the side.
When you were performing,
so I had to start making my
did.
Face pretty.
Oh, poor baby. You're cracking me up. You know, when you were performing a lot at the Cow this past year, you were doing the really hard cut cheeks a lot.
Yeah.
And I remember, I wish I could remember who it was, but it was someone who's a regular in my show, a performer. And they have the performer, is he a I think it was the kitten. Might have been Way Mist, but don't call me on that, people. but all I know is that they were on the subway, and you caught their eye, and you were in boy mode. I'm like, oh my god, that boy, he's a beautiful face. Wait a minute, I think I recognize. Is that, no, I can't, really, is that? And it took them a minute, and it, like, they basically stalked and stared at you for, like, stop after stop after stop, and then they finally realized, fucking A, man, that's Chernobyl. It took them a while. Because that look you were doing really mutated.
It changed everything.
A whole other level.
It changes everything.
But you look gorgeous tonight, I must say.
Well, when I started drag, I said it. I wanted it to make me schizophrenic.
And
like,
the blue
I
lipstick
it...
does take you to another level. You're still doing Beauty and the Beast.
I just wanted it to be someone completely different. Mm-hmm. I don't want to see myself. I don't want to, like, feel myself when I'm in drag.
And your lips are still out of control. You're not, like, normal
no,
mouth by any stretch of the match. It's not
never
just the lipstick,
it.
Folks. It's the shape and the way it was shadowed. And, yeah.
I've tried drawing other mouths, and it just doesn't work. This is the one.
This is the one that makes you feel at home.
Mm.
Yeah, I can tell. You wear it. Like, even when you move your mouth, like, I can tell. Like, you just know what you're up to.
I think it's just, like, a blown-up caricature of what I see my lips looking like as a boy.
Uh-huh.
So I feel... I know
like
where
if you
they
were
are.
A
like,
fuck
I know
doll.
How to move it.
Like, if you were a sex doll. Like, a real doll from that company. Like, a silicone...
Right.
Like... sex doll for the world. Like, what would it look like?
Oh, God.
Are you
it
coming
like
more from an alien
sex
standpoint?
Doll.
Yeah, but it does.
What's the difference?
Your way you do your lips, it really does look like, you know, girl, you got a perk mouth.
Yeah.
It's very deliverance.
It's a very sexual mouth.
Yeah. No, you're totally turning your mouth into an orifice with what you do.
Right.
And now I have you permanently in my show. I can proudly say that. It's a total honor. Every month at Badass Burlesque, you are throwing down something unique and different every time. It's kind of amazing. Really loving it.
This has been my only regular gig lately. And it's bizarre when I do drag gigs now, because I'm used to being in a burlesque gig. Like,
it's
I feel the difference.
It's a slightly different energy, yeah.
Well, and because I can... Bringing drag to burlesque...
You can get slow, dark, and deeper in burlesque, right?
Well,
at least at Badass.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. But bringing drag into burlesque it's like easy and fun, and everybody really likes it. But like... Bringing burlesque into drag is totally different. It just doesn't work the same.
Well, it depends.
Well, I mean, it can, but...
Well, I gotta tell you, like, back in the day, like, I learned how to pee standing up because I was booked at the Cock when it was on 12th Street quite a bit. And they didn't have a place for me to pee, so I had to go into the urinal stall, and I'd be surrounded by these beefy guys. I'm like, yeah, that's right, girl, go ahead, pee, woo! And I got total, like, mad encouragement, and I learned how to pee standing up. The Lure, I don't know if you ever heard about The Lure. It was, like, this really famous Leather Daddy club that was right around the corner from Mother in the Meatpacking District. The things I did put me in places like that. Like, they were okay. They wanted to see me, like, freak the fuck out and knife my vagina. And it's, like, really entertaining. So I was brought to those places. But what I was doing was still burlesque. It was just really extreme, vivid, severe, raw burlesque.
Right.
And it worked. But it wasn't so much a drag environment. It was, like, the Cock and the Lure and the, you know... but then I found after the burlesque resurgence, there were a few shows that cropped up. Stormy Leather was involved, with, I believe, Misty Meaner, and they were doing and Go-Go Harder, and they had a show called Meaner Leather Harder for a while,
which I
really happy to be a part of. It was really fun, and it really showed me how, wonderful and entertaining and full-bodied a show can feel when you have the combination of drag, boylesque, and burlesque together in one show.
Right.
And it inspired me to push drag further into my Badass Burlesque show. That's why now I have, so far, you and Sweetie have been my resident amazing queens. I'm so crazy honored. But,
Formica ever going to do drag for the show?
It's up to Formica.
I was just thinking about it the other day.
Formica going to do? Don't tell Formica what to do ever.
I would never.
Because that would defy Formica's natural core energy.
Well, I think she does such a great job.
She is rocking like an incredible androgynous Joel Grey vibe for the show.
I just thought it was kind of crazy that I realized I don't think I've ever seen her in drag.
Wow, really? Yeah, it's hard for me to think about that because I think for the first 5 years at least that I knew Formica, I only saw Formica in drag.
Right.
Michael Jones, the androgynous embodiment, same energy, it's just an androgynous embodiment, is definitely newer to me, and I'm stoked that that's running the helm and hosting my show.
No, it's just great. I love it.
But how do you feel about drag versus burlesque, like the differences and combining those two and being in those two different worlds, what's it like for you?
Well, I mean, I was really close to the burlesque scene in Iowa with Phoenix L'Amour and her Iowa School of Burlesque. Or at least at the very beginning. I left shortly before it became, like, what it has become. It's gotten really big. But
you seem to run from things when they get really big. You like to be when it's in the trailblazing phase, you know?
Yeah, the flaccid stage.
Flaccid? Chrysalis, girl. Chrysalis. Flaccid. Chrysalis.
No, I was just done in Iowa. I had to get away from there. I don't know, I've always really liked burlesque, so I've enjoyed any chance to bring them together. Doing your show, I feel like I'm a parody of burlesque.
No.
We've talked about this
a little bit. I don't agree.
You always disagree with me.
I do.
But I like
disagree.
It. I'm like the...
I don't feel like you're being a parody clown. Okay, let's put it this way. When a burlesque performer such as like Tigger, Johnny Porcupine, Mr. Gorgeous steps up to the plate, you could easily say the same thing, right? That they're parroting the girls and they're taking they're doing their artistic emotional expression, which is what they're doing, really. And you could, you know, point fingers and say that, but I don't feel that way. I feel the beauty is this, that, you know, burlesque has inspired these individuals to step out of their skin. These men in a women in a women dominated environment, and it's inspired them to express their vulnerabilities on stage and either make fun of them or exploit them and have fun.
Maybe
with
that's
it.
Why I feel like parody.
And
because I'm not exposing myself.
But I don't feel
I'm exposing
like you're mocking
Cher
burlesque by doing that. I feel like
but
you're honoring
mockery.
Because burlesque is full of mockery.
Parody, but not a mockery.
No, but I'm saying I don't feel like you're doing that at all. I feel like you're honoring it. I feel like you're honoring the idea of burlesque with your sense of humor and stepping out there and taking it to another level in the badass burlesque way and getting dark with it.
Yeah,
but you do it with humor, and it's really unique, I have to say.
Well, I'm glad.
Sorry, I'm gushing.
I'm always harder on myself than everyone else is.
You are so fucking hard on yourself. It's severe. But that's,
I've heard that a lot lately, actually.
Why you look really good on stage, I guess. Oh, it is pain. But I don't think you're mocking burlesque at all when you come out and do that. I think you're just taking, like, peanut butter and chocolate and putting it together and making a Reese's cup.
Well, maybe
I feel like you're taking drag, and I feel like you're taking burlesque. And the performance art aspect of burlesque, specifically, and you're making your own Reese's peanut butter cup. I
mean, I get into the performance of the burlesque, like, the jokier side and things like that. But as far as, like, going out there and really, like, taking off your clothes and exposing yourself. I'm out there taking off Cher Noble's clothes. You know, I don't feel like I'm exposing myself.
No, you absolutely are. You're doing a transformation and a reveal. I've always felt like the greatest movies of all time involve the main character going through some kind of intense transformation. Mm. And I take that theory and I carry that into performance art. So when I see a performance artist taking transformation and making art out of it, that's like the best kind. It's like, tasty. It's like spicy, spicy meatball. You know? So it's not, you're not disintegrating in front of us. You're transforming.
Well,
have you ever done a reverse, though? Come out boy mode, go out girl mode?
No.
Because I haven't seen that yet.
It would take hours. I can't do it. I've tried so many times. The best I can do is come out in drag and put on more drag. Mm. I've done that a couple times. Once to a dance remix of Bob Ross talking. I would love to do masking.
The silicone face mask.
I would have to have a really good one though, and they're expensive.
I know, I have one for you.
What do you? Oh yeah. What?
I can't wear it. It looks weird on me.
I've never
seen
it.
It just sits in my closet and I never use it. We're gonna talk later.
I
want to
see
it. Dressed.
Have you ever seen Willow's
Baby? I bought
it because
it reminded me of Angelina Jolie's face.
That's perfect.
But for some reason, when I put it on my face, it looks too manly. And so I don't use it.
I always use the other one. That one mask that you wear sometimes.
It's the
sometimes.
Same company. I just use the
that
other one.
That one always creeps me out because it still looks like you.
That's why I use
but
it.
But like...
yeah.
Like porcelain doll you or like
dead. Exactly. Like dead or like if I got embalmed and there was an open coffin funeral.
Right. It's
what
so
would
creepy.
My face look like? Yes.
Because every time I see it, I'm like, oh, Velocity. Wait.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
no?
why I use that. But
yeah.
See, if I used any other mask, if I used any other version, it wouldn't have that effect.
Right. That
and
one's
that's
really
why this
good.
Other mask I'm giving you that looks a lot more like you. Because your your most female drag that I'm looking at right now is very indicative of Angelina Jolie on crack.
That's my dream.
That's what
absolutely.
I'm seeing right now. Yeah.
More cheekbone.
Uh-huh. Well, on that note, more cheekbone, folks. Chernobyl's message tonight. More cheekbone, am I correct?
Always more cheekbone.
Always
you can never have enough hats, shoes, or cheekbones.
Girl, it is 4 in the morning and I love you.
Oh, God. I have to go to sleep.
I'll get you a cab home. Just pick up a can and raise a can and toast. Hit a good sound. Kissy kiss. Mwah. Mwah. You are listening to Fallen Woman on Radio Free Brooklyn. I'm laughing my ass off with Dirty Martini.
You're so hey! Professional.
Oh, I just, you know, it's a voice thing. I can be as stoned as possible or whatever, or just freshly fucked, and I can just jump into that voice.
It's that voice!
Yeah.
You just blessed.
I got some things, yeah.
I'm looking at him right now!
Hotcha! We've been bumping titties all night. All night bumping titties.
Hotcha!
Dirty Martini.
Should we talk?
Flask in the 90s?
Should we talk a moment about Lois DeFay since I just won an auction?
Oh, tell me
some
about
of her
this.
Things. Lois DeFay was a burlesque queen in the 40s.
Mm-hmm.
And by all accounts, including hers,
yeah.
She didn't have a whole lot of talent as far as dancing or singing or anything. She was just giant. She was like, you know, 6'5".
Like a Bridget Nielsen, like brick shit
house. Yeah, like a big lady in the 40s. And so apparently she was a bouncer in the clubs on 52nd Street where Dixie Evans performed and all the ladies performed. And she was the one, like, kicking people out. But it was a whole publicity stunt, you know, like, the lady bouncer, the lady boxer.
Hot female bouncer that'll fuck you up.
So she passed away in 2012, unfortunately. Neil Kendall from Chester got a good interview with her before she died. Which is great, because we need these stories of these strong ladies. You know, in times when it wasn't possible to be a strong lady and they made it happen.
We need to keep those stories alive.
Yes. So I, today, and Dita and the Burlesque Hall of Fame, we all won an auction today of Lois DeFay's costume from Minsky's. that she strutted around in. I won her champagne bucket earrings.
And I heard they're gold.
Gold! And Dita Von Teese won a signed letter that Lily St. Cyr sent to Lois DeFay. And that she's a real... she's a real collector of the ephemera of burlesque.
Yeah. So,
as you might imagine, like we all are.
I'm sure that's going to end up in a gilded frame with some Swarovski or something.
Oh, everything
yeah.
is filled with Swarovski crystals in Dita Von Teese's world. But yeah, so it's a lucky day, I think.
Congrats on those champagne bucket earrings.
Yes, I'm so excited. Well, I'm excited to have something that is really hers, like something she wore.
An actual artifact.
I love the fact that she was such a big woman and she had little miniatures of everything. Like, there were other things in the auction that were, like, little tiny things that were some, you know, that she thought, you can just imagine that Lois DeFay was like, that's hilarious that I'm 6'4" and I can wear champagne buckets on my ears. I make everything look small.
I can't wait to see the photo shoot with you in those earrings. I'm sure that's going to happen soon.
So it's a love of burlesque that brings us to this part in our life, you know?
Yeah.
I always feel like you and I, who have, you know, been in burlesque, in this neo-burlesque world, adoring the women from the past and bringing it into the future.
Yeah.
I feel like we're the last ones standing. That we're going to be always with our fans over our heads going, but I still love burlesque.
You'll have the fans over your head and I'll have the butcher knife over mine.
Yes, or what have you.
But I, we are almost the last one standing from the 90s burlesque.
Oh, there's a few, but still, I mean, I feel like
our
love of it and the way we came into it. And the
fact... Did you see yourself and going, did you know that you were going to have this burlesque life when you were in high school, for example?
No, I thought that I would be Isadora Duncan. For me, that was to see her posing in Grecian robes at the Colosseum. For me, that was like, that's what I want to do.
High modern dance.
Yeah, so I thought I actively pursued modern dance and got a degree in dance.
I thought I was going to be an actress.
And why is that? Who was it that made you want to be an actress?
Marilyn Monroe.
She's definitely a good icon for that.
I wanted to be just like her. First time I was ever on stage, I was 8 years old. Montessori school, so it was a bit different. And it was the Christmas pageant. And we had a very alternative style dance teacher, Miss Frizz. That was teaching the dance classes at the school, and I was kind of ended up being one of her faves. And there was a day they had an outdoor rehearsal, and there was this little boy that was, I mean, hindsight 2020, I think he had a crush, so he's like mad picking on me. And there was a little girl, because at Montessori school, you're like there, you're in school with kids that are in second grade, and younger and everything. It's a very young girl up there, doing Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend. I didn't know who Marilyn Monroe was yet. I never heard that song, but I really liked the boa she had on, and the makeup, and her slinky dress, even though she was like tiny little kid. And I was just ogling her, I guess. And the brat boy next to me was, I guess, noticing it. And he's like, yeah, I bet she wished that was you. I bet she wished you were up there, hot stuff. Because that used to be, he used to say it with such disdain. He used to call me hot stuff. And all of a sudden, the girl broke down and started crying in the middle of this rehearsal in front of the whole school, which wasn't that big, but when you're a kid, it seems huge. And the dance teacher looked around at all the other kids and then made a beeline for me and got up and, you know, when they try to, like, talk to you really nice, and when adults talk to children in a certain way, and it was right in front of this fucker, and she goes, "Would you like to do that?" And I just remember, and I looked at him, and I looked at her, and I'm like, "Yes, yes, Miss Frizz, I would love to do that." And she's like, "Well, come with me." And she brought me up there in front of the whole school and started teaching me the choreography in front of everyone, I guess, to see if I was going to cry too or something. But and so I ended up going home that day going, Mom, who's Marilyn Monroe? What's Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend? What am I doing? What the? And so they had all set up. There was all these boys dressed up like army guys, like in Korea, the Korean thing that she did. And I had the black dress, and then they gave me a big black boa, and I was swinging it, and I was lip-syncing Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend. And then I had to, like, the kid that was playing Elvis Presley was supposed to come on stage at some point, and I was throwing the boa over my shoulder, and then I was supposed to physically drag him off stage with the boa, and I did. The funny thing is, during the actual recital, or whatever you call it, the Elvis Presley guy who was doing Blue Suede Shoes right before me, in the middle of his performance, broke down crying too. And I remember standing in the wings going, "Oh shit, I gotta work with that guy in my next." But he was a trooper. He let me drag him off stage with my bow, even after
Show
he broke down crying. And I remember saying to my mom after, "What was that? What was it?" She never hugged me or touched me. And I used to get in trouble for, you know, dabbling in her makeup. But that day, she was caking on the makeup and touching my face and just glamour and attention and sexuality. I was just all into it. And I was like, whatever this is, I want to do this for the rest of my life. What is it? And my mother didn't know what to say. She was like, "Acting?" I was like, "Okay, I'll be an actress."
So that's it. Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah, straight up. But that was, I feel like that was actually my first burlesque experience.
Yeah. My father was the band director. And so we used to do these things called pop concerts. And it was really like,
cool.
Yeah, it was like a way to engage the community, I guess.
Yeah.
And so it was really like a burlesque. Now that I look back on it.
Kinda, yeah.
Yeah, and it was like whatever was popular, they'd do like a skit about.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like right around the same time as, you know, Saturday Night Live. So I guess that's sort of the idea, the impetus. But, yeah, it was once a year my dad would do these pop concerts.
Oh,
and
wow.
I was the flash dance girl because I was the one that could actually dance.
Yeah.
So I had, like, a bucket of water thrown on me.
No, really? Like
the
flash
whole
dance?
Thing with the leg warmers.
Like, when you said you were the flash dance girl, you really meant you were channeling Jennifer Beals. Or
and I had a whole band behind me, which is fucking amazing because that's something I dream about.
How old were you when this happened?
Like 14.
You're like 14, bucket of water, a whole full band. Dude, yes. Can I just high five you? That's just
thanks to my crazy father.
It's all his fault.
But, you know, can't blame it on the parents. Some of us have that showbiz spirit in us.
You gotta give him some credit. Yeah.
So, yeah, I've always wanted to, you know, that song. I'm going on the manhunt.
Turn around.
Wow.
I remember I was obsessed with that movie. I saw it.
Oh, my God.
I was like 12 or something.
So genius.
And then I remember when I started working at the Blue Angel, I suddenly was like, holy shit, I think like I'm in like a real life version of Flashdance.
But somebody went
exists.
And saw actual feature dancers.
Yeah.
And then made a Hollywood version of it. It's kind of like the movie Burlesque, you know?
Yeah.
Somebody went to see a bunch of strippers doing their burlesque dancing.
Oh, you mean that movie with Christina Aguilera.
And Cher.
Oh, I love Cher. Cher, I love and the shit out of you, but that movie was... No.
Oh, I love that movie.
Oh, I can't.
Alan Cumming's in it. Come on.
I have the biggest hard-on for Alan Cummings, and that movie upsets me still.
But the best burlesque that happened in that film was the guy who was the boyfriend cutie pie of Christina Aguilera, and he does the strip out of the pajamas.
Yes.
With the cereal box. And that's the only real burlesque in the whole fucking movie, and it's done by a man.
Yeah, it was true boylesque there.
Any moo.
No.
I feel like... The point is that really that flash dance, like what we saw and what we were inspired by, is really a bastardization of what Catherine DeLish was doing in the 80s. That kind of like, you know, feature dancing, kind of like crazy, like high concept...
It wasn't all edgy. Safe and cute, like...
No, it was sexy.
It was edgy.
But if you've ever seen Catherine...
Say that.
If you've seen Catherine DeLish's reel of her, you know, stuff that she did in the strip clubs in the early 90s, then you see, like, what the basis of that movie was.
That movie Burlesque can't hold a candle to Catherine DeLish. At all.
No, of course not.
At all.
But she's the striptease genius.
She's not afraid to take a risk. At all. Like when I saw that crazy piece she did, the giant, the world's biggest, what was it?
The world's biggest fans.
Holy shit.
Crazy. But she, you know, she was somebody that like really enjoyed those competitions and those like that strip club world, and she saw the humor in it, you know, that was inherent and the kitschiness and all that stuff, and she equated it with what it was happening before her with Dixie Evans and the Burlesque Museum and all of that stuff.
She really honored it.
Yeah, and she learned and she put it into practice. And so she became what it was to be a burlesque diva. And I really admire that about her and Dita and, you know, all of us that really started from a real simple place in burlesque where we wanted to honor the past.
And kept the candle flame alive.
Yeah. And now the best part is that we get to watch our elders strip. And that's the best. Oh, like the for legends. Me to watch women who performed 8 or 10 shows a week in the strip clubs or wherever and have that idea in their body. And then to watch them actually... do it at 70 or 80.
It's so inspiring.
It's groundbreaking. It's like...
Well, because it defies ageism. It says, you know, there is no age to sexuality.
There should not be, but apparently people believe that there is a shelf life.
Well, just because you can't make babies after a certain age doesn't mean you stop wanting to fuck.
Well, what about guys? They don't have a shelf life.
Charlie Chaplin. Great example.
They don't have a time clock.
How many babies did he make?
That's allocated to their sexuality.
Yeah.
But I feel like it's so much more, spiritual than it is just base baby making. You know, it's more spiritual. It's more about discovering the person who you are and blossoming in that sexuality.
Yes. And continuing to develop and blossom. There's no timeline
Like there's Annie no Sprinkle.
There's no expiration date.
Annie Sprinkle is the perfect example of what I'm talking about. Like, she is the person that, you know, is constantly expressing herself sexually, whether it's eco-sexually like she is now, or, you know, porn the way she was in the 80s, you know. There's something like...
With those big, beautiful breasts.
She's so attuned to sexuality.
Yeah.
In a really spiritual way.
Like a temple. Because in the old times, there weren't brothels. There were temples. And you would pay homage to the goddess and then, you know, get your nut. You
know? Okay. If you say so, I wasn't there.
I think I might have been. Past life.
Oh, my God.
And on that note, fellow goddess Scorpio woman, I love you.
I love you.
Thank you for throwing it down tonight. Big time. Yes.
Allergies.
No, I just totally bukkakeed all over her face. I squirted. Sorry.
Yeah. That Vicks vapor rug worked.
Thanks for that, yeah.
The Vicks were off.
Nah. Just need to some more of your nostrils.
Oh, allergy season. I love you so much.
Oh, give me a kiss. Thank you for listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. If you enjoy what you hear and you'd like to continue to support independent community media, we hope you'll consider supporting us with a small monthly pledge. You may pledge as little as $1 a month. That's just $12 per year, the price of a cocktail. Wouldn't you buy us just one drink per year to keep local independent media alive and kicking? Please, go to radiofreebrooklyn.com/pledge and help keep commercial-free, independent radio alive. We'll be right back.
called up my captain, said, please bring me my wine. Haven't had that spirit here since 1969.
Children soaked it up, and the house had splinters because there wasn't enough to go around. So the sleep was rough with one eye wide open on the broken door. Gotta watch out for those footmen. Gotta watch out for them whores. They'll take you on vacation as fast as look at you. You'll forget who you are before Barbie does, and your mommy won't be there when the gun is aimed in your direction. Run like a son of a bitch in the sunshine like it's midnight. Don't ever remember that horrible dress stained and ripped when you skipped one town for another like an angry gypsy. Spitting up your tobacco today, just another lost soul you ate along the way to your bedroom tonight. The mirror wants to know why, and you still don't have an answer for them. It's a crapshoot. Silence lives behind the padlock gate as a glimmer of future sparks a light bulb rattling around the brain, ceaselessly stimulated by vast ideas of change in many directions and many crossroads leading to the truth behind choice and chance, destiny and fate, bullshit, reality, desire, loss. How much does the answer cost us today? Is it sleep or sanity? Maybe it's innocence, stumbling along rebelliously happy, oblivious to the oblivion, waiting for us at the end of this fever dream, sweating out the psychedelic toxins until we arrive on our deathbeds, waiting to be born one more time, rolling the dice as if it were an after party for God. And we know that everything's perfect, even when it's his. And we're bending over for expensive answers to none of our business yet. While we tear each other apart, making everyone pay for their reality tunnel and its stubborn afterbirth of hate crime and war. Power over complete strangers, like an ego hand job from the church, a blessing from television, and a big fat kiss from Satan himself. Every Thursday at the stroke of midnight, step into the parlor of Fallen Woman, a weekly soiree of artists on the fringe with underground thoughts and voices shared with uncensored abandon through opinions, humor, candor, and songs.